I'm Marco Werman. This is The World. Another unexpected turn in Ukraine's crisis today. Mass gunmen stormed government buildings in the country's Crimea region. They've barricaded themselves inside and raised the flag of Russia over the Crimean parliament. It's an ominous development, potentially the start of a struggle that could split Ukraine in two. On one side, the country's new interim leaders and the protesters in Kiev who ousted President Viktor Yanukovych. On the other, those opposed to the change and Russia, which backs Yanukovych's claims that he is still Ukraine's legitimate president. Columnist Anne Applebaum has watched this region for decades. She's the author of Iron Curtain, The Crushing of Eastern Europe. And Applebaum says the mass gunmen in Crimea did not appear spontaneously.
Look, this is clearly a pre-planned action. When Yanukovych left Kiev, it's pretty clear that the idea was to move on to Plan B, and Plan B is to create some kind of separatist movement in Crimea and perhaps in eastern Ukraine. You know, the mass men who moved into the parliament this morning were clearly prepared to do so. They were, you know, they were wearing unmarked uniforms. They knew what they were doing. They had a plan. The question now is how it will affect Ukrainians both in Crimea and outside the country. I mean, there doesn't seem to be a lot of energy in Ukraine for a civil war or for any kind of violent separatist movement. I mean, there's never been any indication that there would be such a thing or that people wanted that. But the game may be simply to destabilize the situation, you know, to create, you know, an ungovernable space in Crimea, to upset the new government, to create a problem that the new government won't be able to solve and will distract it from actually its more important tasks, which are to put the economy back right again.
I want to go back to the idea that all of this in the last couple of days and the flight of Yanukovych was pre-planned. What is the evidence that all of this was engineered, and how much do you believe of it happened in Moscow?
Yanukovych's behavior was very, very peculiar. He signed a treaty with, you know, in the presence of foreign ministers from the EU, which talked about holding early elections in December. It spoke about the creation of a national unity government. There was no indication in it that he had to leave or was being forced out of the country. And what he did was, literally, as the EU ministers were still sitting in the building, he left the room, he left the city, and he told all the security guards to leave all government buildings. Somebody gave an order for them to do that. What was the purpose of that? Perhaps there was the idea that maybe the protesters would come in and ransack the building, and then he could claim he'd been ousted in a violent coup d'etat. It's clear that he didn't intend ever to fulfill the terms of the agreement. You know, he wasn't negotiating in good faith. He always intended to leave.
And now Russia is offering protection for him. But put us in the Kremlin's shoes for a moment. How do they see what's happened in Ukraine? And what do they want from all of this?
You know, I think for the Russians, this is a great foreign policy failure. Their original idea was that Yanukovych would somehow drive Ukraine into a kind of locked embrace with Russia, that Ukraine would become part of a customs union run by Russia. And they seem to have decided, right, that's not going to work. You know, we need another plan. Perhaps the plan is to cut off a part of Ukraine and absorb it into Russia as fast as possible. Perhaps the plan is simply to destabilize the new Ukrainian government so that people will once again become disillusioned with this pro-European mood in Kiev, and they'll vote for something else. But, you know, I think the bottom line is that what Russia does not want is a kind of prosperous, democratic, and pro-Western Ukraine.
Why not?
Because that's too much of a rebuke to Putin and his system. I don't even think this is really a foreign policy issue. This is about Russian domestic politics. If the Ukrainians can have a democracy and can be oriented towards the West, well, why can't Russia? And the fact is that Putin doesn't want that to happen, because that would then threaten his own personal power. What's happened in Ukraine over the last, you know, 10 days is really his worst nightmare, you know, that there's a popular uprising and, you know, the people come in and ransack the oligarchs' palaces and find out how much money they've been spending.
I mean, you spent a lot of time in this part of the world, Anne Applebaum. Are you, from what you know, I mean, is there a reason to be hopeful about Ukraine's future?
Ukrainians themselves give me some hope about the future. You know, this is a very educated country. They use the same kind of language that Central Europeans used 20 years ago, you know, which is, we want a normal political system. You know, we don't want mass theft. We don't want corruption. I mean, I think there is a pretty deep and broad understanding of where they want to go. And, you know, where they want to go is Europe. They want, you know, not necessarily to be members of the EU. It's not exactly about that, but they have an idea of what a good and prosperous society looks like, and that's what they want.
I just want to circle back before we let you go, Anne, and ask you a quick question about the stuff that's happening in Crimea today. Do you have any reason to believe that these masked men armed are more than just Ukrainians who are Russian nationalists?
They may well not be real nationalists, if that's what you're asking me, a real separatist. Is it conceivable that they are a group of people organized by the Russian government, you know, from their bases in Sevastopol? Yes, it's possible. Their timing and their organization is suspicious.
Anne Applebaum is a columnist with The Washington Post and Slate. Her most recent book is Iron Curtain, The Crushing of Eastern Europe, 1944 to 1956. Anne, great to speak with you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Reporter Charles Maines is in Moscow. So, Charles, what's the view from there? Do you agree with Anne Applebaum that the timing and organization of these masked men in Crimea appear suspicious?
Well, certainly there's a lot of interest in how this all unfolded today. There's been so much activity, beginning with early this morning with these gunmen taking over the parliament in Simferopol. But the big news also here from Moscow is, of course, Yanukovych is surfacing.
Right.
Suddenly we get news on the Russian wire service that he announces he's still the legitimate president, still the head of the armed forces, and demanding a return to this political settlement that was brokered before his ouster. And then half an hour later, there's another strangely issued statement to the effect that Russia has agreed to guarantee his personal safety in Russia. And then the day ends, in fact, with Yanukovych announcing he's going to hold a press conference tomorrow at 5 p.m. in Rostov-on-Don, which is near the Ukrainian border in southern Russia.
Right. But it is in Russia. So Yanukovych is presumably in Russia right now. Is that right?
Well, there have been rumors that he's been spotted in Moscow and various places outside of Moscow, but none of this is confirmed. But apparently he'll be showing up in Rostov tomorrow. Where he is exactly right now, I couldn't say.
And what about Anne Applebaum's narrative as far as how Viktor Yanukovych left Ukraine, that this was kind of all engineered and planned in advance? Does that fit with what you're hearing in Moscow?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think, it's strange because if you look at the way state media has portrayed Yanukovych, they've certainly kind of made him look like a very ineffectual leader, not in the sense that he's corrupt in any way. And I think that sense Applebaum is right. But on the other hand, they've pointed out that he essentially abandoned his duties. He didn't stay it out and stick it out like a president should. So, I mean, I think the narrative you've seen sort of from everyone from state media to the prime minister, Dmitry Medvedev, pointing out that, in fact, Yanukovych is very weak, and it's, I think, probably a bad sign when Dmitry Medvedev tells you that you're a weak leader.
So this is how the whole story is kind of being presented in the Russian media?
It is, or it has been up until today. I mean, suddenly I think they've made this shift. And, I think as you look at what's happening here, you have to ask, why now? Why would Yanukovych suddenly assert himself as a real leader? I mean, he's disappeared for 6 days, and suddenly he shows up saying probably what he should have said at the beginning if he really wanted to make a claim here. And in terms of why the Kremlin might need Yanukovych, I mean, one theory is that this gives Putin some time and some options to consider what to do about Ukraine and Crimea in particular.
And what's the popular mood about all this Ukraine business in Moscow?
Well, it depends on who you talk to. I mean, I think, certainly among the opposition movement here, which is not the majority, I don't think, they look at the events in Maidan and in Kiev as very inspiring and giving off sort of a chance to sort of reinvigorate the protest movement here. But I think for most Russians, that certainly the way it's being played up in state media and that's an effective message there is that Russian-speaking populations are under threat in Ukraine. And certainly the authorities in Kiev didn't do themselves any favor by essentially outlawing a law that made Russian a sort of a co-national language in Ukraine. So I think a lot of people feel that it seems to be drifting towards that direction where the message is that we need to do something to save these Russian-speaking populations.
Reporter Charles Maines in Moscow, thank you so much.
Thank you, Marco.